Good evening and welcome to the Hugh Hattrick Show. And on this week's special interview, it is none other than Not That Quick. Good evening, Neil. How are you doing?
How are you doing, mate? Very well, thank you. Not so bad. Not so bad.
It's fantastic to see you. Thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. Now, one of the reasons why I brought you on the show, because I thought, wow, you're doing a fantastic job. You've seen really good growth, and also you're very funny and good to watch as you've been doing your videos and as you've been doing your sim racing on live on YouTube. But tell me, how did it all begin? How did you start your gaming experience? What was the first games you played?
So, I mean, I'm going back to when I was a knee-high to a grasshopper type age. I had the PlayStation 1, 2, 3, 4. I've been playing Gran Turismo since the first one. I can't remember what the year that came out. I think I probably just learned to spell. but it was a very long time ago. And I've been playing ever since, really. I stopped for a little bit, and I really got back into it. I'd say around about 6-7 months ago. And I picked up GT7, and I was pretty much hooked from the first day that I tried it. I think.
Yeah.
It's been many years.
Aye. And so, what kind of? I take it's all mainly the motor racing games that you really played. Was there any kind of standout memories that you have of playing these games?
Ooh, that's a good one. It all really stems from a strong interest in motorsport. I've always had an interest in motorsport since I was a very young lad. And when I was, I was probably mid-20s. I'm 39 now, so when I was about mid-20s, I used to work at Silverstone briefly as an instructor.
Oh, wow.
I've been involved with motorsport. I tried a bit of racing, but it is horrendously expensive.
Yeah.
So this was kind of a cheaper option, if you like. So the sim racing, I guess the startup is the equipment and things aren't the cheapest, but overall it's a much cheaper way of getting into motorsport than it would be to race in real life, I think.
Yeah. Now that's a very interesting thing that you said, that you worked at Silverstone, maybe in the 2000s. My friend did his racing license at Silverstone in 2007, and he did it along in the same group as Kevin Magnussen, because he was there. Now it would have been October 2007. I'm sure it was 2007. I think. So if you were around Silverstone at that point,
I was at Silverstone around the time where they started building the new start finish straight with the blade. So that was in production, or that was under construction when I was there. Whatever year that was, is when I was there. I can't remember exactly what year it was now, but I worked there for probably about a year.
That'd be quite fun.
It was good. And then they brought in some new management, things changed, and a lot of people were let go. That was the end of that sort of story, unfortunately.
Yeah, motorsport in that way can be quite abrasive, isn't it? Yes. It can be, you're either in or you're out, isn't it? It's quite a thing that way. Well, I remember using the Stowe circuit. My mate was using the Stowe circuit, and he asked me to come down and watch. And it was great fun, actually. It was really, really good. And I remember trying to commentate on his race and doing all this stuff. And we had all our kind of ideas of what we should do, team orders or in terms of it. Race strategy, it was really good, and they allowed me in because obviously I hadn't paid to get in to do the course, but they allowed me to sit in for some of the theory at the end, which I thought that was great because it was like a week long course. It cost about £4,000 or £5,000 at the time, so it was a proper course, but it was great fun to see it. And I remember when we came down I had a little Fiesta van, and they had a chap from Porsche who was there, because Porsche had a driving event, so they had a bit at the side of Silverstone, I think it was. Mm-hmm. So they had come through. They were all the kind of instructors were working together. When I arrived, my mate had said to this instructor, "Watch out for my friend who's coming all the way from Edinburgh." So I arrived, and he says, "Are you aware that your tire's a bit flat?" And I went, "Oh, I didn't know." So I got out my car, and sure enough, there was my tire. And he had his Porsche tire pressure monitor. It was on 7. It was on the pressure all of 7.
That's not enough.
No. And he said to me, "Where have you come from?" I says, "I've driven all the way down on that from Edinburgh." So
you drove all the way from Edinburgh on 7 PSI.
Yeah, and I didn't know. Thankfully, it was only on one wheel that it was like that. But and I was sitting there about 75 all the way on the motorway. Yeah. So yeah. it wouldn't go any faster.
Speed was probably the only thing that was keeping it. Inflated.
So that was the thing. So you've seen motorsport from a proper angle. You've seen if you worked there. So were you an instructor at the?
We used to run. It was similar to we did actually sell them through Red Letter Days. If you remember Red Letter Days, and Virgin Experiences was another one. But people could drive. It was a selection of cars. We had a couple of 360s, Ferrari 360s, R8s, we used to run those around the circuit. So it was my job to take part in that.
Oh well, so tell me.
I did that for a while.
So tell me, you must have had some quite scary encounters with a kind of lead foot Larry or something like that as they come in. What was some of your good memories?
The best memory there's two memories actually. There's one of which I took out an elderly. I say elderly. I think she was 68, 69, and her family had bought her this experience for her birthday. Oh. And I always said to people when I got in the car, if I'm going too fast, just put your thumb down.
Yeah.
And I'll cut the speed.
Yeah.
So just put your thumb in the air like that and we'll be fine.
Yeah.
So I get halfway around the first lap and this 70-year-old lady is in the passenger seat of this Ferrari and she's going like this. And I'm flat out at this point. I mean, even to the point where I'm thinking I'm gonna bin it in a minute, but we didn't. But she got back and we pulled back in and we unstrapped her from the car and she got out and I asked if she enjoyed it. And she said, that was the best thing I've ever done. She said, I'll see if it compares to next week because I'm jumping out of an aeroplane.
Wow.
Her family had paid for the experience in the car and they'd also paid for her to go and jump out of a plane for her 70th. I think it was for her 70th birthday.
Yeah. So
that was one of them. And the other one, the lady had bought, there was a guy that was, he was a leukemia. He'd been diagnosed with leukemia.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he wanted to do before his passing, if you like, was laps around Silverstone.
Yeah.
And he turned up on a day where it had rained for most of the day and the track was sort of damp. And I've always said there's kind of a gap between a very damp or fully wet track and a damp track or a dry track, sorry. And when it's kind of in the middle, it's almost like the water sort of sits on the surface.
Yeah.
And it's kind of worse than a fully wet track and it's unpredictable. And we sort of had to say to everybody, look, I'm really sorry, but the track's in no condition really to be driven on. It's health and safety, blah, blah, blah. And this woman said that her husband had come all this way and he was a leukemia sufferer. And we sort of made an exception, if you like. And we took him out. I think three of us took him out in the end. And, he was given a bit of an extended drive, shall we say, than some of the other people. There was lots of sideways. That's for sure. That was a memorable one. But it's some very good memories. Didn't last nearly long enough, unfortunately. But no, it was good.
Yeah. So what do you think now of the state of play of being a, you know, driving these real cars, real, you know, great supercars? How do you think that compares with the likes of GT7 today with their road cars? Because they do have quite a few road cars available. Do you think there's a genuine, realistic kind of sense to them?
That's a good question. I think for the most part, they're fairly close. There's obviously some parts of a real driving experience that you can't replicate in a game very well. I think it's dependent on the car. I think some cars are very sort of are much closer to the real thing perhaps than some of the other cars aren't. But I think on a whole, as they call it the real driving simulator or something, don't they?
That's it.
And I think on the whole, it's not far off. If you push a car too hard, you'll feel understeer. That you get the oversteer side of things as well. Tire temperatures, things like picking up dirt from the edge of a circuit and things that feels quite realistic. So I think on the whole, it's pretty close. It's not bad.
Yeah. Now we have a quick question here from Jerry. He says, "Hi Neil, what's your favourite Silverstone layout?"
I would say the full GP circuit before it was reconfigured. I think it was better than what they changed it to. I understand why they changed it, but I come from watching races where people like Mansell and Prost and Senna would come through corners that are no longer there. I'm trying to think of the name of it. Under the bridge.
Oh, what's that one? Yeah, bridge corner. Right-hander.
Bridge corner.
That was a great corner.
That was something else. And I that would be my preferred layout, I think.
Yeah, that was a great one. Now I remember because Alesi had a huge crash at Bridge Corner. I think that was back in 94, wasn't it? Early 94, I think he had
I think so.
Aye, now that's quite a thing. But it did have some, like the Hangar Straight and all of these corners, especially watching Mansell do it in 91 and 92. They were epic races, the speed that they had going around there in those cars.
I think Formula One as a whole, I think, has become, this is just my opinion, but I don't think it's anywhere near as good as what it used to be.
It's funny that, isn't it, how it's kind of... They change the tracks. I remember Lewis Hamilton saying that he was really going to miss Bridge Corner and a few other corners when they changed it. But it's one of these things where they're always trying to improve stuff. But whether they actually do it or not is that. Although I think the new track does work quite well. You do tend to get quite a good race.
It's not that they've ruined it. It's not like it's now not worth watching or anything like that. It's still a good circuit. It's one of my favourite circuits. But I think that it was better. But whether that's because I'm biased and I'm sort of grown up with the older generation of cars, it's still a good circuit. I think it's definitely still a good circuit.
Now, here's a good question from one of your subs called Fragile. It says, Neil, who is your favourite F1 driver in the early 90s to 2000s?
This is going to sound... if I'm going really early 90s, I'd have to say Senna.
Yeah.
I think Senna's kind of... the way that he drove... There was a race, I'm trying to think now, Donington in the wet.
Yeah, I saw that live. That's the only Grand Prix I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I saw it live.
These were cars that were brutal cars to drive.
Yeah.
And there's none of these computerized bits and pieces that these new ones have. It was a lot of power.
Yeah. And very basic traction control. I think Senna did have he did have traction, which the Benetton similarly didn't have. In 93. And he had the Ford engine as well at that time.
Yes.
Which was a bit more torquey, or it wasn't as good as the Renault, but it was better in the wet.
So if I had to, early 90s, I'd say Senna.
Yeah.
And then late 90s, 2000s would be Schumacher.
Yeah. He was a great driver. I mean, I remember Hamilton, of course, for later on. But I remember watching Schumacher win finally for Ferrari in 2000 and getting that first world championship.
Yeah.
And I had a friend of mine who was staying over, and he was from Australia. And we're up in the early hours of the night watching the Japanese Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. And when Schumacher overtook Hakkinen and finally took the checkered flag and got his first ever win, and Ferrari got their first ever championship for years.
Oh, wasn't it?
Oh, it was incredible. They were some good races. I know there were some pretty boring races as well on that Schumacher era, but overall there was some pretty good stuff that went
on. The difference is, I think my main sort of my opinion on it is that back then, if you were to put, say, for example, Senna's race where we won in Brazil with one gear.
Yeah.
You remember. He was exhausted at the end of the race. They had to lift him out of the car. He couldn't move his arms.
I had cramps.
I wouldn't think that if you put Hamilton into that position, I don't think he'd be able to hack it. And I think that's the difference. They're kind of, the cars are almost, they're almost passengers in them.
Yeah.
Compared to before, where it was a lot more, I guess, a lot more driver focused. I mean, obviously, the F1 drivers of today are some of the best drivers in the world.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone can say they're not as good. And Hamilton didn't win 7 world championships because he's not very good.
Yeah.
But I think people like Senna and Schumacher that have started at a lower sort of class team and then fought their way up to world championships.
Yeah.
That kind of journey for me is more,
there was, I remember watching the Senna videos and also the Senna documentary back in 2010.
Yeah.
And and what I think was so interesting, because I was at the time I started following Formula One when I was about 10 or 11, but I didn't watch it that often because BBC only covered it so often and my parents didn't let me watch it all the time. But when I got to become a proper teenager, I started watching it. And I remember watching I would get all the videos of at the end of the year from Duke Video, you'd get the F1 review, and then you would buy the actual driver videos as well that they used to produce with the teams. What was interesting about Senna and Mansell to a degree as well was that they did come from quite humble upbringings, or certainly they. I remember Senna saying he was in a Formula 3, I think it was, and he'd been racing with Brundle, and he says, you know, I'm trying my best. I hope to be there, and maybe at one point I will get to Formula 1. He wasn't saying, oh yeah, I'm going to get to Formula 1, I'm going to be this and I'm going to be that. It was quite, you know, if Senna says, if I get there, and you look what he went on to do, it kind of just shows you a different attitude of how he managed it. I think there were characters it was more of an honest character in terms of how they were portrayed.
I think at that time.
Now it's very well managed. And I think perhaps with the Netflix series that they've done, you get a little bit more background and things that you wouldn't normally see. Mm. But there's no doubt that in the 90s, the big names were quite interesting to watch, especially if you were a teenager. They were great fun.
It was just drama all the time. It was brilliant. And it was properly driver focused. It was great. You'd have seen it in the Senna documentary where him and Prost had their accident in Japan at the Cassia Triangle. It made sort of headline news. It was a massive thing, and it was just far more entertaining to watch back then. The noise alone makes it better, I think.
Yeah, cars nowadays. The V12s and the V8s and the V10s, they were fantastic, weren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah, you could hear them for miles and miles and miles around. I used to deliver, years ago, I used to work for a printers, and I used to deliver paper to a guy that had a little business in Silverstone, just in the village. And if Eddie Jordan
was
around, he quite often tested at Silverstone.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember my dad taking me up one day to watch when Damon Hill was with Jordan.
But
I used to deliver paper to this guy, and I'd be sort of stood in his little shop, and you could just hear him screaming in the background. And bearing in mind, there's fields, the roads, houses, buildings, car parks, and everything in between us and where this car was, and you could hear the car over the top of everything else. Just magic. They sounded magic back then.
Yeah, so it was one of the most disappointing experiences was watching the first race of 2014 when they went to the V6s, and all of a sudden you could barely hear anything. You could hear the crowd over the cars, you know, which you never would hear.
Well, they've done it. It's better for the environment and everything else, and, you know, the emissions are lower, and, you know, hug the trees and whatever they do. But
it's F1. They all fly around the world. Exactly. It's really a bit of a hypocrisy. Well,
this is exactly my point.
Yeah.
I know people like Hamilton, and everyone loves Hamilton and everything, but you can't put a post out on Instagram and say, this summer break I've spent in Africa talking to elephants and doing my bit for the environment, and then jump on your private jet and then ship yourself back off to Monaco to drive around in your one-off Pagani supercar that does about 8 miles to the gallon. Shut up.
Or even his trousers and his T-shirt that probably cost about £1,000, and the jewellery and everything else.
This is another thing, going back to how drivers were before. Years ago, or back in the 90s, drivers would turn up in, and I know most of them do turn up in, you know, branded clothing, and they look like racing drivers, but Hamilton turns up looking like a quality street.
Yeah, I know. He has gone quite eccentric.
It's just a bit much, isn't it?
I just wish it would be more kind of English eccentric, because then that would be quite funny. If he wore purple trousers and slacks, I think he would be hilarious.
If he turned up in tartan trousers.
Like a miniature Jackie Stewart. Yeah, that would be quite funny. I think it's gone it's got that corporate edge now, which is
it's a moneymaker now rather than a than what it used to be.
I know that's it, isn't it? Aye, because before it was people might call it slightly misogynist, but then it's Formula One, for goodness sake. You've got people like Bernie Eccleston and James Hunt doing the commentary, so you're going to get, you know, it's not exactly going to be politically neutral or whatever. I used to love listening to Murray Walker and James Hunt. They were great commentators when they used to do that.
I was a huge fan of Murray Walker. I was living with an ex-partner of mine, and on the day that it was announced that he passed away, and from being a fan of Formula One for such a long time, and growing up listening to Murray Walker, I remember sitting down and being sort of quite choked up about it, quite upset about it. Because it's somebody that you don't know the guy personally, but you've spent such a long time watching him. It almost feels like you know them, and when they pass away, it is quite upsetting. And I remember my partner sitting there going, "Why are you getting upset for?" And I thought, people don't understand, but it's Murray Walker was great. I loved watching Murray Walker.
Yeah, that was the thing.
Listening to Murray Walker.
Yeah, well, I was the same when Senna died. I was only 19 when Senna died, and I remember I was in a state of complete, because I'd followed Formula One so much.
Yeah,
you never thought anything like that was going to happen. No. And for Senna to die, it was a horrific weekend. But for when Senna died after Ratzenberger, it was horrendous. And I didn't actually see the race live. I listened to it on the radio. And it was only at the end of the day. I was out for the Sunday. And when I came back in about 6:30, I was desperate to turn on the radio. I didn't have a TV at the time. And all I heard was Jackie Stewart saying how such a tragedy has occurred. And I thought, oh, no, he's dead, you know.
I was actually quite surprised that they went ahead with that, to be honest.
It was a terrible race.
I don't think they should have done.
Yeah.
I think it was Barrichello had a bit of a smash that weekend as well, didn't he?
That's right.
Ratzenberger was killed in that accident.
The circuit wasn't suitable. The runoffs, you had no runoffs. And also you had a Vauxhall Cavalier GSI as your pace car.
Yeah.
So it was never going to be able to
shouldn't have gone ahead. No.
But
you know, it's one of those, and unfortunately, we'll never really know the reason why. I mean, there's all sorts of speculation about how it happened.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because like, a lot of the guys in the sim racing community, especially the older ones, because you know I'm in my late 40s, you're still in your 30s, which is nice. I remember those days.
Yeah, just about. I'm still clinging on to dear life. I've got 2 months left.
And I know we'll probably have younger folk in the comments and watching as well. But they say it's motorsport goes through these eras, and when you watch it all the time, you find that 10 years later, you know, it sticks with you. There's certain, you know, whether it's certain drivers or certain aspects of it. There's things that you just remember, and you think this was a golden era. Like the '90s was definitely a golden era, and I think to the 2000s as well. And when Hamilton came in at the start, and he was winning races that nobody expected him to win, and you know, doing these great moves. And I always remember Fuji 2007 in the wet, when they couldn't see anything. It was just mist and cloud over the track, and Hamilton won after hitting Kubica and all sorts of things going on. And I remember that was his first year when he was heading for the championship. And Martin Brundle said, because he won that race, he says he deserves to win the title for that race alone. He said that was the most incredible race. Yeah. You know, and you get those, like when Senna won his first race in Portugal in the wet, you know, and that was an incredible race. Motorsport has this incredible, especially Formula One, have these most astounding efforts and races when it all kind of goes collapses in on itself and you get this incredible race. So tell me your take. Here's a good question for you. I'm sure it will cause a bit of controversy. Okay. What did you think of Abu Dhabi 2021?
I remember watching it, and I straight away after the end of the race, my dad phoned me, and I'll always remember the conversation because I was sort of on the edge of my seat. I thought, well, that's it. Like, Hamilton's gone and won again. Fair enough. And then the rules were bent slightly, shall we say?
Yeah.
And and it went in the other direction. And that last lap was probably, rightly or wrongly, was probably the most exciting moment in Formula One for the last 10 years.
I would say.
I was sat, I remember I was in my house on my own, nobody else was in there, and I jumped off my sofa and I was shouting at the top of my voice.
Just like Toto Wolff.
Probably not in the same way that he was shouting. But it was brilliant. And I remember ringing my dad and I was thinking, this is great. I'm so pleased for the start.
It was a great race up until that point.
It was such a good race. I think my kind of view on it is, I understand why Massey did it, because he obviously wanted the last lap of the last race of the season to be exciting. And it just fell into Red Bull's hands because they pitted. The decision to pit Verstappen to put the fresh softs on was made before Massey made the decision to let those cars through. So Verstappen just fell into luck. And that is literally all it was. You can't blame me, the team, for it, because it is what it is. Massey made the decision to make the last lap exciting, and it just happened that Verstappen had been given fresh soft tyres.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I mean, what should have happened, I think, is there shouldn't have been that point where nobody was allowed to overtake, because the FIA rules state that lapped cars can
all of them.
And that could have been done. They had, I don't know how many laps it was, but it was three.
It was only one or two. I think it would have been quite difficult if they had allowed all the cars to basically finish the race without a safety car. I think if they had, by the time it took all the cars to get past, I think Hamilton probably would have won the race under the safety car.
Yeah. But I think they kind of, my feeling was that he hesitated, and I know there's a lot going on. There's an accident on track that he's got to get cleared up.
Yeah.
He's in contact with Bert Marlander in the safety car. He's also dealing with team screaming down the radio, asking what's going on. So the guy's got all these different bits of information being thrown at him all at once. Yeah. And he's got to make a decision, and he just acted on what he thought was the best decision at the time. And it made for a really enjoyable last sort of race of the season. Unfortunately, it didn't go very well for Mercedes.
And then they've never really been there since.
I predicted it, because I don't think anyone could have predicted it, but it kind of showed that the dominance that they had in that car up to that point.
Because
as soon as everything was kind of put on a more level playing field, they weren't doing as well. I mean,
the 2021 season was amazing, though, because Verstappen would win one race and then Hamilton would win the next. Mm. It was that close.
Exactly.
You know, it was something else. Now, Cars IR9 has said a very good comment there. He said, to be honest, I personally feel that the FIA and Netflix play a part. And I do think that. I do. I agree.
Yeah, I think he's right.
I think Michael Massey was a bit out of his depth, and he wanted to try and balance the race because, you know, Red Bull were pulling off some quite dodgy moves, but Hamilton was always on the receiving end of that. He was always kind of more clean. And then they kind of felt like they had to give him a chance, and they had to give the other a chance. And I think they just took control of it too much rather than just letting it play out properly or penalising people for doing dodgy moves one way or the other. you know, you have to do it. But it's been interesting. I really hope that next year could be a bit more competitive.
I hope so.
Because it's been 2 years of pretty, not great races. A few overtakes in here, but it's been pretty dull. Yeah.
For the most part, you're right. It's been a little bit boring. I've come away from watching some races and thought, well,
that was a wasted afternoon.
That was a wasted, yeah. 2 hours I won't get back.
That's
a surprise. Verstappen's 25 million seconds in front of anyone else by the second lap, and that's the end of the race.
He could start from the back of the grid every time and still win.
Maybe they could put rules in that make it a bit more entertaining.
If
you've won six or seven races in succession, you have to start from the back for at least four. Or something. That's never going to happen. But it did get a bit tedious in places, I think.
It's interesting, Cheech180 has said, Netflix attracted the worst fans to F1. And Jerry says, get rid of DRS. I think though DRS, I don't mind that so much to kind of help the overtakes, to be fair. It's kind of, also, now Rue says a good statement there. They miss a lot of the action, especially the Sky coverage. You know, they'll be looking, halfway up the field and forget about the overtakes up at the front. And they literally miss, for the lead and for the top three or top four. And then they're concentrating on something way down or something that's not really that important. And I don't blame the commentators, but I think the editors and those that actually control the TV sources don't tend to do a great job at the moment in Formula One.
No, you do see quite often, you'll be listening to Brandon, and he'd be saying something about something irrelevant, and it'll come up on the screen and it will say yellow flag. Yeah. And nobody's got any idea what's going on because you're watching two people that are maybe in the bottom four of the grid overtaking each other. Well, nobody needs to see that. They're not even in points. Nobody cares. Going back to the interesting bit.
It's like Stroll and Magnussen fighting for 13th or something.
Well, there's no point in watching it because everyone knows that within about five laps, two things are going to happen. Either one of them's going to crash Yeah. Both cars are going to stop working and they'll both be walking back to the pit lane.
Yeah, yeah. Now, that's the usual thing. Now, tell me, going back to sim racing, you mm-hmm. just released a video, which I strongly recommend people watch. Yeah, I know it came out about an hour ago, but which is on, you said, the worst driving you've ever seen 100%. In GT7. And this is always really good. This is a good topic of discussion. So what did you see earlier, and what's been some of your worst experiences so far on GT7?
So the worst experience so far was probably... the one that I had, it was yesterday, or was it, might have been the day before. But it was a German who tried, it's on daily race B at Barcelona this week, or Catalonia. And he tried a bit of a move on the inside of the long right-hander onto the back straight down towards the hairpin. Yeah. And he was maybe a car's length behind me. I turned in, and he just pretty much went straight on into the side of me, realised that he wasn't going to make it, went to the right bit, put two wheels on the grass, and then got a bit of a wobble on. And that kind of started the rest of the race, because, the next corner, he'd basically got up to about 500 mile an hour and just drove straight into the back of me.
Yeah.
So at this point, I'm thinking, okay, he's not very happy. So I've laughed it off. I've got back onto the track. Another lap goes by. He does exactly the same thing at another corner. Another lap goes by. He tries again, misses me completely, and hits the guy behind me.
Yeah.
So he's missiled him off the track, and it ended up in just absolute carnage. Absolute carnage. It wasn't a race at all. It was Mario Kart for the most part.
Yeah, yeah. Which is crazy.
I've said this on a few of my videos, that I get, people do it and they come on, and this guy, Kimi Velocini, that's been all over the place. People, they come on and they play the game and they think it's funny to kind of smash people about and do all of that. But for people like me and others that come onto the game to race properly, it just ruins the whole experience. And especially if you're there, I mean, the guys that watch my streams, they're good people, and for the most part, they watch the stream because I'm streaming. They're not really fussed whether I'm coming first or last, which is nice.
Yeah.
But for people that stream and have viewers that want to see the races to be proper races and that kind of thing, it just ruins the whole experience for everybody. And it's one of the things that annoy me most about the game, because they're just not dealt with.
Yeah,
they'll get a 2-second penalty and their ratings will drop down a little bit, but that's not really going to stop them from doing anything. They need to do something. So if you get umpteen amount of penalties in so many races, that's it. You're banned for a week, or banned for 2 weeks, or whatever, or you're just disqualified from the race. Forget penalties, just boot them out. And it's sometimes it's funny. The video that I made today, I see the funny side of it. I was in hysterics whilst I was playing it.
It was
hilarious. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. I've seen it happen to other people.
Yeah.
But, and we've all been in races where somebody's given us a little shunt or a little tap and something, and it's a bit, that's a little bit naughty. But to be aimed at by a cruise missile and taken out in that, it never happened to me before. So I thought, this is hilarious. What have I done? And I watched the replay back after the race. I replayed the start of the race whilst everybody was watching, and I'm looking at this guy and I'm thinking, I don't think I did anything. And it was hilarious, because the reason he was angry was because he tried to nudge me out the way and then made a mess of it and taken himself off. And that's what upset him. So he's made himself angry by making a mistake himself. And then he's decided, well, I'm going to take my frustration out on the guy that I couldn't kill the first time. So that's basically what his race turned into. And then when I'd got out of the way and I'd finished the race, he then took that frustration out on somebody else.
Yeah, yeah. But that's it. So it's some 13-year-old having a goal.
I think that's what it is. No, I think that's what it is. So somebody's actually commented on the video. I noticed before we started the interview. Apparently his name in German means very dangerous.
Really? Oh well.
Apparently that's what it translates to. And I didn't reply, but every ounce of my being was, well, that isn't the translation into English that I would have used.
No.
I'd have used a completely different word. But it was an interesting race, that's for sure. That's probably the worst one that I've had, I think.
Yeah, because I've been in races with Kimi Vellacini, and he's taken me off before. There's another one, I think it was Koku. He was, and also there was a missile. There was, what was it? Or a lethal torpedo.
Another one.
Yeah, yeah, he took me off last week or 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah, Murray Moses is another one. There's an Italian guy called Puglisi.
All right. Yep. That rings a bell.
Yeah, he's he's a bit of a rotter. There's a few of them about. I think most of them, the worst ones, that I think most people are aware of them now, and they tend to just sort of stay clear of them. It happened to me. I had two or three races with Kimi Vellacini in last week at Monza.
Yeah.
For the first race, I decided I was going to try and get my big boy pants on and overtake him. And it didn't end well at all. So for the two after that, I decided, I think I was in fifth or sixth.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, I'm happy with that. I'll stay here, thanks. So I let them, Jeremy, you can go off in the distance and fight. I'll stay here.
That's fine. So it's quite hard, though, because learning how to pick your way through a difficult field, because if you don't go through, you can end up getting overtaken by other people or hit by somebody else. And then if you do go through, sometimes they'll come after you. So, you know, or you might, you know, there might be a bit of touch of gear in there.
It puts you in a very difficult position because, like you say, you don't know whether to hang back. But then if you hang back, the guys behind you will catch up.
Yeah.
But if you push forward and you end up in this mess of a 4 or 5 car pile-up that could ruin your race completely. So, it does put you in a very difficult position. You don't know. It's difficult to know what to do in that sort of situation.
Yeah, yeah. Now, a quick shout out to Arkies, because I know Arkies is in the chat there as well. For all of you guys that are new to the channel, especially who are new to following Neil, you might not be aware of Arkies' channel. But Arkies has been doing these great race A guides and also time trial guides and various other really good videos. He's a wonderful chap. We've had him on the show a couple of times or more. If you like on a Monday to see race A, then Arkies is your man. So make sure you go over to his channel, as well as not that quick to make sure you subscribe if you haven't already subscribed to Neil's channel, because it's really, really good. And it's great to see your channel growing so quickly and really appealing to a lot of people. Arkies is leading the way when he does he's on a pad. So there I go.
Oh, thinking, okay.
Yeah, I'm very competitive with Arkies. Arkies
is better man than I am.
He's not having to worry about me, but I am concerned if I can't get near him on my times. So that's why I buy all this gear and I still can't get anywhere near his times. But Arkies is really good. He's good fun and does a great job of doing his videos and races on a pad, and he beats Tidgney and some of the top guys with his time trial times and daily race times. So very, very good indeed. On to another subject. Now, you've got the subject of mental health on your channel there. How did all that come about? What's the main reason for having that on the channel?
The mental health side of it is really why the channel started.
Yeah.
Because I was diagnosed with PTSD not so long back, quite recently. And the first therapist that I spoke to said that what I need is something to focus on. Because one of the things I was struggling with was I was finding that I was spending pretty much every day lying on a bed, watching Amazon Prime or Netflix, and I was slowly turning into a vegetable. I sort of decided I've had enough now. I remember it happened. I won't go into too much detail. I remember I went to work one morning, got up, got ready for work, got in the car, got halfway to work, and something just switched. And I had a full-on breakdown in the car.
Yeah, yeah.
And I sat there for 10, 15 minutes, and I turned the car around and I went home. And that was kind of the turning point for me, where I said to myself, I've got to do something, because this is not good.
Yeah, yeah.
It came off the back of a fairly horrific experience that I went through a couple of years back.
Yeah.
So I kind of just decided that enough's enough. I've got to deal with it. Yeah, so I got in touch with GPs and doctors and things. And they put me in touch with a therapist through the NHS. And one of the first things that she suggested was that I do something that gives me something to focus on, to sort of get my mind out of a rut, and to give me something positive to do. And I thought, well, I'm enjoying playing Gran Turismo. Yeah. Maybe I could do something with YouTube. So I started off initially. I made a video by capturing a replay through the PlayStation.
Oh, yeah.
And I uploaded it to, I set up a YouTube channel, made a little logo, uploaded it to the PlayStation, or to YouTube, sorry. And it got, I think it was 20, 30 views or something.
No.
And I
that's
thought,
that's all right for us first go.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
And and I thought, well, I'll do another one. So I did another one, and that got about the same. And then I started getting into it, and I was finding that it was, I studied at college as a graphic designer. So using all of the programs to create the thumbnails and the logos and then edit videos together and things was, I enjoyed it. So I wasn't just enjoying the racing side of it. I was enjoying making the videos. And then it just sort of grew from there, really. I got myself a webcam. I bought the rig and the steering wheel and everything else. And it's basically turned into what it is now. So that's basically where it comes from. So I quite often say to people that are watching the stream, if anyone's ever struggling with anything, I've put my email address on the homepage, on the channels page. And I've told people, if they want to just get anything off their chest, to just drop me an email. So that's kind of the whole reason behind it. It's gone from giving me something to concentrate on and to focus on to helping other people as well, which is brilliant. It's nice playing the game. I said this today, actually. It's nice playing the game. But my favourite part of it, the bit I like most about it, is the community that comes with it and all the people that I talk to. Everything else. It's brilliant.
No, I think it's a very big point, and I think it affects people regardless of where they are on YouTube. Because I remember speaking to some of the quite big and growing YouTubers about 4 or 5 years ago, and I had a concern with one or two of them, thinking they're going to crash and burn here if they're not careful, because they were putting so much into it. And I thought, when do you get a day off? You know, every day another video was uploaded, and live streams and everything else. And you think, you have to have time off. You have to have relationships. You have to have family or something to try and, you know, a life outside of YouTube is vital. Otherwise, you're not really experiencing quality of life. The things that you really need, you know, to be able to give you a contentness, because otherwise you're just going to be either frustrated or overjoyed at a race too many highs and lows. And I think that's a very dangerous way of life to live, because it's not like you're, you know, you could do that if you're James Hunt. You could race away and you could do all that because they had the money, they had all that. But in YouTube, you might not make very much money, if anything at all, unless you're very, very good at it and you manage to get it right. And so for most people playing this game, I think they have to take it carefully. How much are they going to put into it? Isn't it? Because it's too, everyone, you know, also there's this huge hype. Oh, I'm going to make thousands on YouTube. You know, I'm going to be the next big thing. There's only so many folk ultimately that are going to bring that audience, that can sustain that audience, isn't it? You're going to try and find the niche to make that work. And it's great when it happens. But do you agree, or do you think that is, you know, there's a big push for people to think this is going to come easy and it's going to be a hard awakening?
I think I went in to, I started the channel with no expectations whatsoever. And I've said to you before that I originally thought, in fact, my first goal was that I thought if I can get 50 subscribers by Christmas, I thought I'll be over the moon. And then I got to 50 and then I thought, I might try and go for 100. So I thought I'll go for 100 by Christmas. And then 3 days later, I'd done 100. And then a couple of weeks back. It's crazy. But I thought, right, I'll go for 200 by Christmas. And then before I know it, I've got to 200. And now I'm trying to get to 5. But I think it can almost be an addiction. Because I find myself checking to see whether I've got new subscribers in an unhealthy amount of the time.
Yeah.
I'm always looking. And I think it's very easy for people to go, I might do this, I could do that, I could do this, and get so into it that, like you say, you lose track of reality. So I make a point of, when I stream, it's usually around 9 or 10 a.m., and I'll play till around 1, maybe 2-ish, and then that's it.
Yeah.
I'll have the afternoon to relax or maybe watch a movie or something. If I've got a video to put together, I'll put a video together. But I make sure that I'm not, I don't want to do it from sort of, 8 in the morning until 8 o'clock in the evening because I'm desperate to get subscribers. It would be nice to have subscribers, but I'd rather them come whilst I'm doing a healthy amount or putting a healthy amount into YouTube than get them from killing myself doing it. I think it's easy for people to sort of get the idea that if they put 10, 15 hours a day into it, they're going to get hundreds of subscribers and then start making money. Whereas you'll know yourself, it doesn't really work like that.
Yeah,
you have to get it's watch hours and it's subscribers and things like that. There's criteria that you have to meet. And it's like it's not a good idea to be pumping 3 or 4 videos out a day. I think you'll end up being very miserable and you'll lose touch of reality. All sorts of things could happen and you'll have no idea.
It's kind of interesting. It's almost like, because YouTube is like the social media of sim racers and all of that, isn't it? Obviously you put everything else out on other ones like maybe Facebook or Twitter or other things. But it's funny because I remember when Facebook first came out, you would put a post on and then you would keep going back to it to say, who's liked it, who's made a comment. And if you made the mistake like I did of getting into political things, that was a terrible, terrible, terrible mistake. Because
don't do that.
No. Because then you wake up in the middle of the night and your phone's beeped and you make the mistake of reading it. Somebody's disagreed with you and called you, whatever. And it was horrible. The emotions are
stop.
Because you don't see people and they can say things that they maybe don't mean. But it can get pretty horrible very quickly. And I think we have to be in this area, the exposure for mental harm, if you're not careful, is huge. I think anyone with a channel that's growing, I'm sure, I don't know about Arkies, I know you're always saying how nice your community is, but along the way, because you're well monetized and you're over that 1,000 by a good way, have you experienced you might not always have somebody you might get a troll, isn't it, that comes into your chat and that says something. I know Key said that a few times and things like that. So, we have to take the risks into consideration and make sure that we're mentally prepared and we have a bigger picture, I think, to keep us on a good level.
Yeah, I've had it. I've had a couple of comments that have been less than positive, shall we say. On a couple of videos. I've had a stream where somebody's made a comment that that wasn't really necessary. I've had people come into the stream after a race where something has gone wrong and they've come in to vent their frustration. It happened the other day, actually. I can't remember the guy's name, but he came in and he made a bit of a dodgy move during the race, and he dropped into YouTube and into the stream and tried to defend himself, and he was unceremoniously ripped to pieces by everybody in the chat room. But it's you do need to be careful about what you say. I mean, I can be quite if somebody has upset me in a race and I've made a video about it, I have quite often used the words plumsack in my videos. That's been one. Or sausage is one that my American viewers seem to quite like. But it is quite easy, like you say, because you're behind a keyboard or you're behind a screen, the person's not in front of you. You don't have that kind of, people just say what they want.
And it's
the same on every form of social media. It's not just YouTube. You know, people are hanging themselves because of comments on Facebook and things.
It is
quite a serious matter.
And
you're right. You have got to be careful.
That's why I say to young people, don't get a phone. You don't need a smartphone. Not until
we were growing up.
It's not worth it. Right. It's not worth it for all the hassle. The hassle and all the stuff and all the ups and downs. You've got enough to go through as it is. Unless you might need it to send messages. Just get one that sends a text and you can, 4 hours like the one on the I joke with my kids. If I do get them a phone, I'll get them the one from the Diary of a Wimpy Kid, because either it phones the police or it phones home. and that's about it. So, it's...
Social media is just a very strange, a very strange place at the moment. I remember I was scrolling through some of these short videos on Facebook recently, and I think if I had to put a percentage on it, there was, I'd say 90% of the videos I saw were young girls after some form of attention. 5% were probably men wanting attention, and the other 5% were marginally informative, if you like. And it's there's videos of girls on Facebook walking into the middle of the street, taking their shoes and socks off, and then doing a little dance.
Yeah.
And kids are watching this and go, oh, that's what I need to do. I'm going to start doing that. No, don't do that. Don't stop it. It's not normal. These people are broken.
It's a lot of issues.
And stuff, but you know, there's ways of getting attention in that sort of way. It always makes me think people are putting these videos up because they want attention. So my kind of reaction to it is, this person, and on a serious level, needs some form of help.
Because
nobody should need to feel the need to put that kind of stuff on the internet to get validation from other people. If you're not happy within yourself and you need that kind of validation from other people, something somewhere isn't right, I think.
It's a very difficult thing, I think, nowadays, because of a lot of like family breakdown and different things. You don't get the same teaching of how to look after yourself and how to find a good partner for a relationship, things like that, what to look for in a person. You know, it's all done on social media or magazines or other stuff, isn't it? So it's a real tricky thing, you know, and it's trying to teach your children what to look for is so important, so that they, you know, come through life in a balanced way. It's very difficult. And I think there's so many distractions as well, because you can be playing games all the time and not be a parent to real life, you know, and not face up to those responsibilities which you need to do. There's a lot going on in those days when we just had Ataris or BBC B computers that could only play a tape or a disc.
Yeah.
You know, and then we were told,
I had a video player. The remote had a wire, but it wasn't a remote at all. It was connected to the thing that played the videos.
Yeah.
You used to press the button. It was, I remember it was a silver thing. I think it was a Sony, but it was a proper tape, one of these big things, and you press the button and the top pops up and you slide the video in and then you press it down.
Yeah, that's it.
And
I had a Decca video. Our family had a Decca video from 1983 and that was it. And it was quite a thing. That was the same way. You put it down, press play, and it took about 5 seconds for it to start. But that was it. But no, it's interesting times. I think we have the best opportunities today, but also toughest circumstances in many ways.
Yeah.
And it's a very interesting time. And that's why I think the subject of mental health is so important.
Yes.
Because otherwise there's a lot of people getting dragged into situations that are not healthy. And I think as somebody on YouTube that has a channel that's successful, that's growing, that has a community, it's good to be able to talk about that and just be frank, you know, just be real, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because we have to grow, on track and help people through difficult times. It's a good way of doing things. But it's a thing. So tell me, in closing, we've been going for just over an hour, which has been amazing.
I've just looked at the time and I didn't even realise.
Yeah.
You're having fun, you.
Oh, absolutely. I hope you are. And I hope that everyone watching in the comments is enjoying it. We're getting lots of comments put down, which is great. So what are your plans for the near future for your channel?
It's something that, I had no idea that it was going to do as well as it did. My original plan was just to make a couple of videos and to give myself something to do. But now I'm finding that it's given me, you know, I sort of say, well, I'm going to be on between 9 and 10 o'clock. So I need to be up at this time and I need to set the stream up and I need to get this ready. So it's given me structure as well. But the plan is to grow the channel. I'd like to, if I can, include at some point in the future, videos of actual motorsport, not just sim racing. Whether that be visiting races or I used to do a lot of kart racing and I haven't done it for quite a long time. So that's something that I'd like to get back into. So that's something that I'd like to sort of bring into the channel as well. But I'm kind of just taking each day as it comes at the moment. It's going in the right direction. I'm happy with the growth that it's got. Every day is a new day.
Yeah. Oh no, that's fantastic. Just to let everybody know that this will be going out as a podcast as well in a few days' time. So if your listeners don't manage or viewers don't manage to watch it today, they'll be able to get it as a podcast, which they can play in their car or wherever they might be going. I'll give you that in a few days' time when it all gets uploaded. Now, would you like to say something about your community? This is the time when you can be as honest as you like.
If I'm being honest, genuinely, I know it sounds cliche, but I don't really have a bad word to say about any of them. All of the people that come into my into the stream are all nice guys. There's a couple. Cheech will be aware of the fact that him and a certain, I think his name's Cameron. I can't remember the second part of his name, but him and Cameron have what I'd like to call a bromance going on at the moment. And they repeat the same words to each other. So I'll be sat there and I'll be driving along and I'll notice all these comments popping up on the left-hand side. And I'll look down and it's just Cheech and Cameron going, "You're my best friend. I love you." And then there's little emoticons that pop up all the time. So, if I had to make one criticism, that might be it. But in general, Cheech has been a part of the channel for since I started it, really. And every time I start a live stream, he's involved. So yeah, they're all a good group of people. There isn't anybody in there that I wouldn't want there. Everyone's pretty good.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. But what we're going to be doing, we're going to be having a Christmas special in a few weeks' time, probably the 21st of December, which is a Thursday. So if you did fancy coming back on that show, we'd love to have you back on.
I'll come back on, but being so close to Christmas, Hugh, there is a very strong chance that I could be intoxicated.
that would be quite funny. But that would be the thing. We hope to have a few other guests as well to come on. We'll see what we can do to try and get. We've got maybe Chupagetti lined up and maybe a few others as well. We'll see what we can do. Two years ago, we managed to get Rory Alexander on. We had Mikhail Hizal, you know, the world champion driver. We had Valerio Gallo on as well. We had Susie. Yeah, we had them all on at the same time. We had Keirith Cart, you know, Keirith Cart.
I feel like a celebrity now.
Yeah, so we had Womble leader, we had Darren Turner. So I hope to do the same kind of thing as well. And also, we've got plans to do a Podbean podcast live, where you can do a live show and just going out onto the podcast streaming service. And we're always looking for people who would like to be on that, maybe even a co-host alongside Andrew Marr and myself. So if you know of anyone, or if you'd like to participate in that, we were thinking about talking about GT7 just on a weekly 10 or 15 minute podcast. If you would like to join us with that, you'd always be welcome.
Lots
of banter and lots of fun. And it seems to be a good platform to get people listening and get them joining in. But it's been amazing. Neil, to have you on the show.
No problem at all.
The humble man that calls him not that quick, but somehow I doubt that to be true.
I have my moments this week. I've definitely lived up to the name, that's for sure. There have been moments where I'm not too bad.
The thing is, we all try, isn't it? We have our good days and our bad days. It's amazing to have everybody watching. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you haven't already subbed to Neil's channel, there is a link in the description. Now I know how to do that. It took me a wee while to learn how to actually copy links. But there you go. It's in the description there. I'm sure Neil would appreciate some new subs on there. Yeah, it's got absolutely a fantastic channel. And if you like this channel as well, and you want to see more interviews and make sure you don't miss a show or a video or a stream, then it would be fantastic to have you subscribed as well. But don't go anywhere. I'll end the stream there. But thanks to everyone who has been watching. And you might not know our special, our kind of finishing line, Neil. I don't know if I've told you that.
Is it a good thing I'm sat down?
Oh, yeah, it's fine. It's not going to. It is drive fast, but drive your bus even faster. Hits me being
that's
a bus
good,
driver.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw that in my stream today, actually.
I may have put it in there. I'm a bus driver, you see.
There we go.
I drive fast, but I drive my bus even faster. So take care, everyone. And have a great week. And I'll be streaming again tomorrow. But make sure you click on Neil's channel and give him as much support as we can. Bye, just out.
Thank you.